Can't we all just get along? Those, of course, are the famous, if plaintive and ironic words of Rodney King, who was stopped while speeding and fleeing, and after a long pursuit managed to get himself beaten, clubbed, tasered, kicked, and finally arrested and hospitalized. And when, after the trial of the police officers who beat and kicked and tasered, and there may have even been racial epithets, who knows, were acquitted, Los Angeles, you will remember, exploded. And Rodney, as the riot began to ebb, asked, can't we all just get along? It's an important question. It's as important a question as any deep and famous philosopher ever asked. And as we look around the world, as we look around the community, as we look around at ethnic strife and religious strife and internecine strife, the families in conflict, organizations in conflict, organizations that are afraid to be in conflict and are conflicted even about whether they are allowed to be in conflict. We look around the world at everybody who's mad at everybody else, and the clear answer seems to be, no, Rodney, we can't. And maybe what we ought to do is just accept that and sink into cynicism and despair. Or maybe that isn't such a good idea. Maybe even if we can't all get along all of the time, maybe we ought to put some effort into getting along some of the time and accepting some of the time who we are as beings and how difficult and prickly we sometimes are, because to romanticize our nature or to ignore our nature doesn't give us an opportunity of dealing with the reality of just how difficult it is to have community, family, nations, intimacy without those terrible gifts and curses that we bring through the evolutionary process to the modern day. All of those flight and fight hormones that rage within us often, all of that genetic predisposition to sacrifice our lives for a cause that we consider at the moment to be good, all of those urges that we have to break and smash things, they may have been really terrific when we were living in the savannas of Africa at some time in prehistory. They probably helped get us personally, our genes, all of which from all of us began somewhere in the primordial slime, if you accept evolution, and if you don't, you've made a mistake in reading the bulletin and where you came, but that's another story. All of those things that brought us to this moment where we live and we choose and we rage and we stifle and we control and we compensate, they may have been really terrific gifts back then. But on the 57 at 5 p.m. on a Friday evening, these are the kind of urges that get people killed. And they're natural urges. And just remember, natural is not an endorsement. An awful lot of people go between natural and unnatural, whether they're talking about urges or sex or foods. And I am just happy to remind people that Socrates drank organic hemlock and it didn't do him a bit of good. Just because something is natural doesn't mean we don't sit in judgment on it and say yes or no for ourselves. Getting along is pretty difficult stuff for human beings. Getting along with each other, getting along as religions, getting along as nations, getting along with ourselves. Now, I shared with some of you, and in my newsletter article, one of my experiences with steroids years ago. Not bodybuilding steroids, but medical steroids. Years ago, I was given a shot of steroids for a bad case of poison oak. A case of poison oak that I got with the one and only art class I ever took. When we went out to Point Richmond and I tried to sketch Alcatraz and I didn't even get a stinking t-shirt. All I got was covered with sores. And the irony was, I swear to you, even standing under the beam, I swear to you that my Sunday sermon for that week that I was broken out in all of this poison oak was, don't be afraid to touch. I should also add that an eye was swollen closed and I was wearing a patch. It was, the ironies just built and built on each other. It was really quite wonderful. Didn't seem so at the time because when I got the shot, I went nuts. And I mean really paranoid, hallucinating nuts. Now, there were no other drugs involved. It was Berkeley in the 60s, but knock it off, Chris. There were no other drugs involved other than the steroids. And I was scared to death of being scared to death because I didn't know that I had not become permanently nuts. So a couple of weeks ago, when for another condition, the doctor decided to ruin my promising Olympic career, I guess they're offering medals now in rhetoric, and gave me steroids, I had some fear. And he looked at me and said, oh yes, well, steroid psychosis is a relatively common side effect, but we think you ought to take it anyway. Easy for you to say. So I did, and I did not feel myself. I felt anxious. I felt the urge to be out of control. I felt that what's called roid rage, sometimes manifesting, as we discussed, in road rage. Now, I have, as a human being, all of the normal impulses to be crazy that everybody else has. I mean, somebody cuts me off, I have a momentary impulse to get at them, to tailgate them, to run them off the road, to press that little button on my dashboard with the controls of photon torpedoes. I have the impulses to get angry, to yell if I'm in the middle of something boring, to just say, what are we doing here? I don't have time to sit through this movie, to sit through this theatrical presentation. This is the worst junk I've ever seen in my life. I have all of those impulses, but I don't act on them 99.9% of the time. And they are fleeting. They are momentary. I feel the urge and I get past it in a millisecond. With the steroids, I didn't. It was an act of will to act sane. Those gifts from the primordial slime that had evolved, that epinephrine, that adrenaline, all of those crazy thoughts, it took effort to keep them boxed in. It took a conscious effort. Now, when I mentioned this briefly a couple of weeks ago, someone asked me, well, does this give you more sense of empathy for people for whom this is an everyday struggle? You bet it does. We are so precariously balanced as human beings. The veneer of civilization is often thin and can be upset by almost anything, by an event that gets our blood pumping, that releases the epinephrine, by an event that shakes us up, by a drug that we take for one condition that affects something else. A tumor that puts out hormones can completely change our personalities. We are incredibly, delicately, finely balanced organisms. And you bet that I have a sense of compassion for people for whom it is an everyday, every moment act of will to pretend to sanity that we don't always feel and that nobody feels all of the time. Because if you don't have some weird impulses running around, some of you even at this moment, you're not normal. Or you're over-medicated. All of us have moments of joy and of rage and thoughts that are inappropriate to our circumstances, and most of the time, we manage to do okay. But it can be difficult. And when we look at the rest of the world, at how easy it is for a mob to go out of control over nothing, how people can apparently fight and kill each other over the color of a handkerchief, whether you're wearing red or blue, it's not really about that, over transubstantiation versus consubstantiation, it's really not about that, over whether the Arian heresy at the beginning of the founding of Christianity, about whether Christ was the same nature of God exactly or a really similar, and people killed each other over that. The things that we fight about as nations, as religions, as communities, are often, if not always, not the things about which we are fighting. We have, and the strife begins, and that's the point of telling my steroid story again, the strife begins inside ourselves. I spent some years ago 45 minutes hanging out with Rodney King in a bicycle shop. Nice guy. Bright guy. Not stupid. Well-spoken. Polite. I really enjoyed the conversation. And when I look at what's happened to him since he had been arrested 3 times before the beating and 9 times since, he had been awarded $16 million, and people argue about how much of it he actually saw and how much of it the lawyers saw, but suffice it to say he's broke today, and he clearly acts often adverse to his interests, as all of us do. The strife that we see out there in the world begins often inside ourselves, and it goes to family. It goes to friends, it goes to communities, because we human beings have to make moment-to-moment accommodations and think about what are the things that we truly value, what is inherent to how what we consider our character to be, and how do we act congruently as best we can with that sense of character. And it is not automatic, and it is not for all time. It is a moment-to-moment decision. There's a wonderful, horrible scene in the film Ordinary People when the kid complains, he's going through a very difficult time in therapy, and he cries out to his therapist, "I thought that therapy was supposed to make me feel better." And the therapist says, "Not necessarily." Freud said that the purpose of analysis is not that the analysis cures the person being analyzed, but it gives some power and some control by understanding who we are and how we got to be who we are. It's not an automatic cure, but it begins by looking honestly at who and what we are. I think we make a lot of mistakes as individuals and as families in dealing with surface issues as opposed to underlying issues. An awful lot of the wars are not fought about what people say the wars are fought about. Some of you may know this. An awful lot of the fights that we have as organizations are not about what we think we're fighting about. A lot of the arguments that we have with our children may not be about what either we or the children think it's about, because it is that moment that sparks the conflict that we often deal with and not the cause of the spark. And to deal with deeper things means stopping every once in a while and looking deeply, as they say in the 12-step programs, taking a frank and fearless inventory of ourselves, of our urges, of the normal madness that is inside every human being, and accepting it because it's part of us, doesn't mean liking it, accepting it, because if we don't see it, we can't fix it. If we can't talk about it, we can't therapize it. If I don't look honestly at myself in the mirror, and I mean that emotionally as well as physically, I can't know myself unless I'm willing to go inside and look at all that stuff. One of the great gifts the steroids gave me was, wow, there's an awful lot of stuff going on in there. And there's a lot of work every day. Sometimes it's unconscious when I'm mostly off the drugs now. I actually am completely off the drug now, and it's probably out of my system by now. But every day, it is an act of will to compensate, to look at ourselves, and to look at everybody else. You know, the instincts of humanity seem to be us and them. Us being the good ones, them being the bad ones, and us having more inherent dignity than them, even though both us and them can't do grammar. When we look at the people out there, when we look at the people who are homeless, the people that we feed at the shelter, the people whose bodies we step over on the sidewalk or we cross the street to avoid, when we hear, or I guess it's more confusing now since people have all these telephones and earpieces, but when we see somebody talking to themselves and they don't have a telephone implanted in their ear, these people did not choose to go out. When they were children, they did not say, you know, someday I want to go and sleep rough on the streets of Fullerton. They did not choose what voices they were going to hear in their heads. They did not choose the kind of fate that they had. We also may be programmed to turn away from the wounded, from the different, from the other. Sometimes it is because they frighten us, because we ask ourselves, could it be me? Could I be that damaged? And the answer for all of us, given the delicate balance that we are, is could be, yes. But the answer is not in averting our eyes. The answer is in turning our eyes to them and to ourselves, turning ourselves to the universality of the human condition, the terrible and wonderful fragility that we all have and that we share with all of the wounded and all of the wonderful who are out there, and to see ourselves not as us and them, or at least as shifting us as in them, to see ourselves associated with those people on the street, with those people hearing voices, with those people shouting, with those people on the other side of whatever issue we're on the other side of. Doesn't mean we erase differences. On the contrary, it means we acknowledge them. It doesn't mean we erase the idea of there being conflict. We acknowledge the instinct to conflict and take the courage to go deep in ourselves and to try to go deep with others in order to begin to deal with it. It doesn't make it all go away, but it may give us power. Now, it's very interesting. When I was in college, I boxed. And one of the things that boxing teaches you is very against our instincts. Because when somebody throws a punch at a normal person, the normal person closes their eyes and flinches. This is a very bad career move if you're going to be a boxer. Closing your eyes in the ring is not going to lead to success. It's going to lead to unconsciousness. And since I'm preaching in favor of consciousness, what I'm saying is boxing does train you to keep your eyes open. Why do we close our eyes? if we're untrained, when we see a blow coming. Why do we close our eyes when the car goes into a skid? Because we don't want to see something that we know is going to be painful. But keeping our eyes open gives us a much better chance. Keeping it open literally, keeping it open figuratively and emotionally gives us information and the power sometimes to choose to do the right and the good and the generous thing. Can we all get along? Not all the time. And we have to accept that. Can't we all just get along? Well, maybe for the next 5 minutes. That's a start. Maybe for a day. Maybe for a week. And even when we don't get along, maybe we can trust each other enough to come back together again in the embrace of reconciliation. Sanity, society, community, and family are committed every day in every minute, often unconsciously, but I would argue better consciously, by an act of will to say yes to ourselves and yes to each other.